Never seen the enthusiasm and the love that we have now. This has really been incredible. And if I didn't think we did well last time, I wouldn't have done this because, you know, it's a little tough life. It's not the easiest. You get shot at. Other things happen. Other routine events happen. But we're going to do it for one reason. I wouldn't have changed. They asked me just a little while ago, a reporter said, "Sir, if you had to do it again, would you do it again?" I said, "Absolutely, because we're going to make America great again. And that's better than my life." Right? These guys know. He knows.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That clip just blows me away. I mean, I think of the scripture, "No greater love hath man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." And President Trump has not only nearly given his life, we already know that the Secret Service is still out of joint, out of whack, and that his safety's not guaranteed now, and yet he continues. And, of course, his life, his personal life, all of the lawsuits, all of the incredible things that have come at him, the embarrassment, humiliation. Well, you may think he deserves it. I don't think so. I don't think so. And so maybe you can turn the podcast off if you think he deserves everything he's gotten. But I would defend him. I just would defend him based on what I've seen and what I know, because he's done some incredible things. Well, we're among heroes right now. We really are. I know these are tough times, but I think, what comes to mind, I think of the January Sixers. Some have been in prison for almost 3 years, on a pretrial detention. One former decorated Green Beret is in D.C. He had a couple of misdemeanors. Now they've been switched to felonies. He's been put in the general population of the prison, and yet he will not, what, recant? Because he believes the 2020 election was stolen. And he will not recant. And there are so many heroes there. I think of John Eastman. I think of the people that just stand up and to be counted, and they just take their licks. And there are lots. I can't even remember. I'd take the whole show if I listed them. And it encourages all of us, doesn't it? Courage breeds courage. Well, our guest today was with us yesterday, and certainly he's a man of courage. Jeff Clark was an assistant attorney general for a number of years. Then he was, for a time, an attorney general. And he was, let's just say, he was concerned about the election of 2020 and what went down. And he told us about that yesterday. He talked about how William Barr pretended as though he were investigating or order investigations, but in reality he wasn't. Was quashing the investigations. Jeff stood up, tried to do something about it. He ended up getting indicted, unindicted co-conspirator. He ended up getting, you know, his house raided, pulled out of his house in his underwear in the early morning hours. It was and is still a nightmare. And yet, Jeff Clark will not recant. Just like Martin Luther, we have heroes among us. Today, we're going to talk about what's happening with President Trump, because Jeff Clark is in a unique position to be able to talk about this. He was his attorney for quite a bit of time. So I think you're going to enjoy part two of our discussion. But first, there was a girl named Alyssa, and she wanted to confirm her pregnancy, so she went in for an ultrasound at a preborn network clinic while her boyfriend Damien waited outside. They were planning a trip to Louisiana for an out-of-state abortion when they found the clinic, which was just across the street from Alyssa's college in Houston. Miraculously, they noticed the building for the very first time. Alyssa was astonished and deeply moved when the ultrasound revealed beautiful, identical twins. She called Damien, "Come inside, now!" Although he was reluctant, Damien eventually confronted the truth he just couldn't deny. Faced with his baby's lives right in front of him, he wept. Alyssa, Damien, and the ultrasound technician watched in amazement as the twins interacted with each other, already closely bonded. Despite being early in her pregnancy, Alyssa's little babies were full of personality and sucking each other's toes. The two strong parents were so moved by this powerful encounter that they decided to cancel their trip to Louisiana. Okay, you see what preborn does? Do you see why I love their ministry? Do you see why I ask you to help them? Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. You can call us at 662 821 2040662-821-2040. You can send us an email at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. Most of you know, but some of you don't, at podcasts. You find them on podcast platforms. That's easy for those of you who are accustomed to it. But if you're not, go to afr.net. That's our home base. That's American Family Radio. And you can find the podcast, Sandy Rios, 24/7. You can go to my website, sandyrios.com. That's very simple, too. And listen to the show without fretting. Well, coming up after this little, after the music starts, you're going to hear again part two with Jeff Clark. And just to be specific, let me introduce him on this side of the music. Jeff was an assistant attorney general under William Barr, and then he was, for a time, the attorney general. He played a lot of roles, and he did really do some very bold things in terms of the election, trying to investigate, just ask questions. And for that, he paid a very big price. In fact, there's a movie coming out September the 16th called The Jeff Clark Story, and you can find it at thejeffclarkstory.com, and you're going to want to watch that. I know you are. Jeff is currently serving as a senior fellow for the Center for Renewing America. And so sit back and relax and enjoy today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. Well, in regard to President Trump, we just heard that clip about, I'm blown away. I really don't think he's the same man he used to be honest with you. I think since the attempted assassination, I hear different things out of him, like the statement we played a few minutes ago. But he is in a world of hurt legally because of the Justice Department, and it's so entangled. Jeff, the E. Jean Carroll case, you know, he did a long, like a 50-minute response to, now it gets complicated for me as a non-attorney, but a hearing that took place a few days ago. And he opined about a lot of these. And actually, as inarticulate as he is, I actually thought it was very effective. But on the E. Jean Carroll case, can you just say a word about how it is they could charge him with a crime with so little evidence and having so much time elapsed, he had to pay an $88 million fine. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, so let's make sure we're keeping separate two things. One is E. Jean Carroll's civil lawsuits against Trump. And procedurally, they get kind of complicated, but, you know, there's a boil down for that I'll give you in a second. But the other case, obviously, is the Stormy Daniels so-called hush money case, right? That one's a
right.
criminal case based on, you know, supposed violations of New York bookkeeping law.
Right, that's Mershon, Judge Mershon.
Right, that's Judge Mershon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, back on the the E. Jean Carroll case. So actually, I defended the E. Jean Carroll case when I was at the Justice Department, because when federal officials are sued in tort, those are, you know, it's a common law category for if someone claims they're injured, right? Whether it's a physical injury or some other kind of injury to reputation, et cetera, including defamation, the Justice Department defends that for the federal official. So President Trump was sued in state court. They were moved to federal court, and we took the position as the civil division of the U.S. Justice Department that suit was ultimately something that should be barred because there's not a waiver of sovereign immunity for a suit that sounds in defamation. So, you know, if the postal truck driver, like, runs over your foot, you can sue and recover damages under the Federal Tort Claims Act. But you can't recover you know, if you claim that you were defamed by a federal official who was speaking in the course of his official duties. And we took the position that when Trump was asked at a press conference about this E. Jean Carroll book and, you know, salacious articles that she put out publicizing her book, et cetera, he said it was all lies. And so then she sued him for defamation. That whole case was funded by Reid Hoffman, the LinkedIn billionaire. It was fomented by George Conway. Seems like that was his idea. A supposed conservative who switched sides, and other people like Molly Jong Fast at her New York swanky apartment. And they designed that strategy to try to pull down President Trump. I defended it. The district court judge ruled that Trump was not acting in his official capacities, basically. And we took that on appeal to the Second Circuit, and then that case and then the administration ended. And so the Biden administration inherited the defense of it. And I can tell you the career people in the civil division who ran the torts branch of the civil division, they fully thought that our position was righteous. And indeed, it carried through the Biden administration for quite some time. But eventually, you know, the political pressure to get Trump grew, and they changed their position, and they told the Second Circuit their position changed. And then ultimately, you know, long story short, from that point forward, you know, it wound up staying in federal court. But basically, President Trump didn't have the defense that the whole action was all wet. So that's that case. It's ridiculous for that reason. It should be totally barred because there's no waiver of federal sovereign immunity. And President Trump was well within his rights as president to say he denied claims that E. Jean Carroll was making and the amount of money they awarded her. You know, and they awarded her money twice when she'd already been recompensed, supposedly, for her damages to her reputation. Also makes no sense. So lots of problems with that case.
Let me jump in. The reason I want to jump in is because people listening won't know, you know, they won't know anything about her case. And I want to say, for the record, as I understand it, the statute of limitations was up. The chances of Donald Trump molesting her in a dressing room and that big department store in New York City are just zero to nothing because of his and a couple of things. They pulled out a dress like the Monica Lewinsky thing and said they had evidence. They examined the dress and there was nothing on it, no evidence whatsoever. And then the judge ruled that the Trump defense team could not use that dress in his defense. They wouldn't let them cross-examine her. I want people to know. It truly is. I mean, I think they think President Trump, a lot of people, this is the issue. You know that, Jeff, that he's some sort of a hound dog. Let's just say that. And that, of course, he's guilty of all of these things. This one is just ridiculous beyond measure. So, right. And then now she's gotten all this money. Okay. So,
yeah, I don't buy it. And her basic story is that Trump was coming into the Bergdorf Goodman, you know, high end department store. She was leaving. They bumped into each other, and he asked her to try on lingerie that he was buying for someone else. And then that they went to the dressing room together, and all consensual up to this point, according to her. But then, you know, it crossed over into the non-consensual. The whole story, I don't buy it. And you're right; they changed the statute of limitations. You're also right that the judge made a mockery of due process by essentially preventing Trump from putting on a defense. And here's one key detail. You know, you mentioned the dress, but another key detail is that she can't even remember what day this was. So, you know, and the idea that this could happen in a busy department store and someone not notice Donald Trump going into the ladies' dressing room, it just, you know, it beggars, belief.
Yeah, someday, and you know, think, you know, someday, well, maybe someday we can laugh about these things, but I kind of, there's so much damage done in this. It's really not funny. I think she got her whole story also from a Law and Order episode. But anyway, okay, that's me saying that, not you, the Mr. Attorney. But Judge Marchand, you're going to talk about the Stormy Daniels criminal case, is that the one?
Yes. So that one, you know, the argument is that, you know, these were essentially, you know, like campaign expenses, and they were booked, you know, as if they were legal expenses. And so Trump lied and he committed bookkeeping misdemeanors. But then Alvin Bragg decided to plus them up into felonies by arguing that those bookkeeping misdemeanors were committed in the course of committing another crime. So you need another crime. So first of all, Trump was not given due process, fair notice in the indictment filed against him of what that other crime was. It was like the mystery crime. I remember that I went for, the NTD TV, which is the affiliate of the Epoch Times, up to New York and covered, you know, all the proceedings that day when the indictment dropped and when Alvin Bragg appeared in front of the cameras like a, you know, fish out of water and you know, refusing to take questions. And he was asked specifically, what is the other crime? And he's like, I don't have to tell you. I mean, I'm literally not making that up. So then, you know, we come to the end of the case and we're told sort of as it's, you know, getting nearer to conclusion, the other crime is that President Trump committed a federal election law violation. And now, you know, more violations of law and more violations of due process enter. And I was in the court that day when, you know, those issues were argued. I managed to physically get into the courtroom and watch Judge Vershon and watch the arguments back and forth. And first of all, that issue, lawyers, you know, who are in the know would say is preempted, which means that there's federal law is superior over state law, right? And federal election law and the statutes that govern it, it preempts state law. It's not for a state court or for state authorities to decide that federal election laws are violated. It's either for the federal courts or for the Federal Election Commission. So that's pretty clear. Judge Vershon rejected that legal defense. But then he compounded that because President Trump and his lawyers wanted to bring in a former eminent commissioner of the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, to testify and point out that the supposed violation of federal election law was not actually a violation. And that, you know, any person who might have, let's just say you go with the entire prosecutor's story and Stormy Daniels was paid money, you know, not to disclose any information about this, even though the story had been in the press for, you know, like 2 years before, I think it was published in the German press. So the idea that it really needed to be kept silent is itself questionable. But let's suppose you just credit that story just for the sake of argument. Even if you credit that story, the FEC commissioner who would have testified for Trump explained that that was not a violation of federal election law. Hence, you know, you were only dealing with a bunch of misdemeanors. And, you know, instead, President Trump wound up by the jury getting convicted of, what is it, 34 felony counts for the bookkeeping offense. And the judge, you know, was convinced by this guy, this character, Matthew Colangelo, who had been the acting associate attorney general. That's the number three official in the Justice Department, to leave being the number three federal Justice Department official and to go and be a line prosecutor working for Alvin Bragg. That move makes no sense. It's an upside-down professional move. It only makes sense if you're scoring points and banking points with the Democrats for bringing down their principal political enemy, who is Donald Trump. And so I watched him argue that day, and he argued, like, Your Honor, you're in charge of the law. You can't have a witness come in and tell you what the law is. Well, but, you know, Juan Merchan is a state court judge, and he was never the commissioner of the FEC, and he's not a federal judge, and he's also has no experience with federal election law. And so, of course, any judge would want to be educated on that and would want the jury to understand that context. But, you know, instead, President Trump was denied the due process right to put on that defense witness.
You know, the Stormy Daniel case has been out there for so long, and I remember when I was on the morning show for AFR, I had a letter, and perhaps you're aware of this too, and I don't want to get stumped on this, but it's a letter from years ago where Stormy Daniel makes a statement that she never was intimate with Donald Trump. She makes this statement. I don't even remember what year it was.
Yes.
So this is just, and what you didn't say, wasn't he fined like $400 million or something like that?
No, the sentence hasn't been imposed for the Stormy Daniels case yet.
Okay.
So there's now we're really talking about three pieces of litigation, but it just shows like the vast array of lawfare they've launched. There's the E. Jean Carroll case, there's the Stormy Daniels criminal case, and then there's the civil case against his businesses launched by Attorney General Letitia James in New York.
Okay. Right.
That's the one that generated the $500 million verdict.
Okay. You need a flow chart. Yeah. So, exactly. All right. So we've got Alvin Bragg and we got Jack Smith. So what, since that decision of the Supreme Court about executive privilege, has that affected these two cases in any way, especially Jack Smith's? I've heard all this speculation, but I really don't know how it came out.
Yes. So look, first, a quick tutorial on the July 1st Supreme Court immunity decision of Trump v. United States. It's one of the most important constitutional decisions, actually, in U.S. history. And it holds that the president, for his core executive functions, which include the entire Take Care Clause, which means every time a president enforces a statute or a regulation or the Constitution directly, that is all absolutely immune. Then anything else he does out to the full outer boundaries of the presidency is at least entitled to presumptive immunity. And in order to overcome the presumption, a prosecutor would have to show that he engaged that the prosecution or the civil liability decision would not interfere with the powers of the presidency. And that's a tall order for anyone to try to show. And lastly, if the president, though, is engaged in truly private conduct, then there is no immunity, right? So that's basically what the decision holds. There's one last piece of the decision. The decision holds that President Trump is the beneficiary of an evidentiary exclusionary rule that says that information, evidence of consultations with the Justice Department or, internal talks inside the executive branch, including the president, that those cannot be introduced as evidence against him, okay? And that's what creates a problem for Judge Mershon's, the Alvin Bragg case about Stormy Daniels, and it also creates a big problem for Jack Smith. So first, in terms of Judge Mershon, and I think seeing this problem, that's why he postponed a sentencing that was due to take place on September 18th until, I think, November 26th or thereabouts, is because of that issue. And so here's the issue. The prosecutors brought in people who, like Hope Hicks, who talked about conversations that occurred inside the Oval Office about the whole Stormy Daniels issue and the payment that was made to her. Well, that evidence was introduced to the jury, and that evidence violates this new Trump v. U.S. exclusionary rule. And I think it's worse than that. At the very least, that means he needs to get a new trial because that evidence cannot be put before a jury to try to get him convicted by the so-called Pettit jury, right? The ordinary jury that, hears a case and renders a verdict. But I suspect that they also put that same evidence about Hope Hicks in the Oval Office, et cetera, before the grand jury in order to get the indictment. So the entire indictment is infected by this error that violates President Trump's constitutional immunity powers and the evidence rule connected to it. So the whole case should be thrown out, and Alvin Bragg would have to start from square zero, in my view. And that's what they're arguing. And Mershon was going to try to go ahead and sentence Trump, but then, got cold feet, and now it's not going to be till well after the election. So now Jack Smith. So Jack Smith, he wants to keep going, guns a-blazing. He told Judge Chutkan, who's presiding over that case, the federal judge in D.C., that she wanted to get going even faster than he did. But he said, please give us some extra time. We're consulting inside the Justice Department. Well, I'm sure there were some consultations going on, but it now appears that the real reason why he wanted delay was because actually he had ginned up an entirely separate grand jury from the first one that had indicted President Trump, and that case is what went the Supreme Court in the Trump v. U.S. case. So we got a new superseding indictment from a new grand jury, and it's clear that he did that because of the problem I pointed out with the indictment that Mershon got, right? I'm sorry, that Bragg got, that went to Mershon, that, there was evidence presented to the grand jury that violated the Trump exclusionary rule. So to avoid that problem, Jack Smith, smart, clever, he's like, well, we can't risk the whole prosecution comes down, so we're going to have to get a new indictment from a new grand jury that hasn't heard that evidence. They might not have heard it in the courtroom, but, they probably in D.C. were exposed to it through the press and through what I call the journal lawfare establishment on TV. I think the whole jury pool is tainted for both grand juries and Pettit juries in D.C. And so he gets the new indictment. The new indictment, thankfully, I definitely breathed a sigh of relief, took me out as an unindicted co-conspirator, but continued to press against President Trump. And, he is allowed to do something now, which I've never seen in my nearly 30-year legal career, at high levels in both the Justice Department and in private international law firm, Sandy, is the ordinary way in which these things unfold has been totally turned on its head. The analogy I put on X was, it's like letting Jack Smith make two chess moves as white, who goes first, in a row. So he drops the superseding indictment, and normal sequence of events would be the criminal defendant then moves, if they have grounds for it, and Trump definitely does under the Trump immunity decision, he moves to dismiss the indictment. And then the judge gets briefing on that, in which the defendant, here President Trump, will get the last word, and then decides, should the indictment be dismissed in whole or in part, right, or not. But no, Judge Chutkan set up a schedule whereby Jack Smith dropped that superseding indictment, and on September 26th, so watch for this date, it's going to be a big date, Jack Smith is allowed to preemptively defend his indictment as proper after Trump v. U.S. and put in evidence to support that. And only after that does President Trump get to try to counter it. And then Jack Smith is the one, even though we're talking about a criminal case where somebody could lose their liberty, he gets the last word on whether his indictment is proper or not. It turns the whole legal process, in centuries of Anglo-American practice and motions practice on its head. It gives the prosecutor the first double move in the chess game and the last word. It's really remarkable.
Jeff, I think the thing that people wonder is who's minding the store? Oh, you've got so many judges. I know judges are kind of look like little gods, small g. They are. They're a lot of times they're appointed for life, and sometimes they're elected. But we have kind of, it seems, a host of lawless judges. So that's that. But then we got a lawless Justice Department. And I would think, for some of these judges, you'd think there would be oversight. And I know there is, provision for impeachment. Is it just because everybody's so corrupt that there's no accountability?
So look at you, and you had forecasted that you wanted to ask me about solutions, right? So we're talking about the judiciary, and we're talking about the Justice Department, right? So let me do the Justice Department first. I think the Justice Department is in very strong need of reform. I think President Trump has pledged to bring that reform. They attack him as saying that, he wants to weaponize the Justice Department against his political enemies. I find that to be humorous in the extreme, being on the receiving end of being one of the Democrats' political enemies against whom the system has been weaponized, right? I had a potential looming federal issue. Thankfully, Jack Smith dropped me out of that. Then I have the state issue with Fannie Willis, and then I have the bar issue, right? So don't talk to me about President Trump weaponizing systems. I mean, they're the ones who weaponized it. They have whole organizations like this thing called the 65 Project that has been going after both me, one of my lawyers, and against John Eastman, who I know you respect. And so, look, we're going to need legal reforms of that system, and I think that we need President Trump to get those legal reforms done, because the Biden administration is not going to regulate itself. They want this persecution of President Trump and his allies. And then as for the legal system, right, I mean, the legal system worked. The Supreme Court issued this immunity decision despite the fact that the entire leftist and leftist professor pundit class, they said that there's no way a president should really have any immunity, for any criminal charge. That proved to be wildly wrong. The Supreme Court ruled 6-3. That President Trump had, both a huge category of absolute immunity and then a secondary category of presumptive immunity. And the Justice Amy Coney Barrett, she didn't agree with this exclusionary rule that I described. So on that, the decision's still 5-4, so still a majority. But the Supreme Court reversed a unanimous D.C. Circuit panel that sat in an appeal above Judge Chutkan and reversed Judge Chutkan and found that immunity. So, look, I mean, I think that the judges in D.C. had gone off in the wrong direction. Hopefully, they will be chastened this time around, because they're going to have to resolve those immunity questions again. But, I'm hopeful that, judges who are not you know, they can be political, but they're not as political as the Biden Justice Department. I hope they will change course after the Supreme Court decision.
There are so many things, other things I'd love to talk to you about, Jeff. We'll have to continue this conversation because I, you know, it'd be great to know, but there's no way to know how we purge the Justice Department, and purge really is what I mean. I mean, I remember J. Christian Adams writing, he's also a good friend, I know you know him, he wrote this long article, he was a Justice Department whistleblower, and he wrote an article later about how Barack Obama was staffing and stacking all kinds of hundreds of appointees to the Justice Department that were from the worst kinds of organizations, and they're still, they're all still there. So it's a huge hill to climb. There's an army of people there. What is the Justice Department's what, the largest executive federal agency in D.C., isn't it?
I'm not sure that's correct, but you know, it certainly is. It occupies kind of a princely position because the agencies in general, the departments in general, they don't represent themselves in court. So, you know, they can take various positions, but when the rubber meets the road and something's challenged in court, they have to speak through the intermediary of the Justice Department, and the power that that represents is huge. And so, look, I can also tell you from personal experience in having hired career lawyers that, you know, the Democrats try to stack that process as much as possible against Republican applicants, and they try to do it in neutral-looking ways. Like, for instance, in the environment division, right, where you don't want to wind up with an environment division of the Justice Department that is entirely radical green, right? You'd like to just have people who want to be neutral law enforcers and some, you know, have some party mix of Republican and Democrat, right? But until I got there, they were testing essentially for, is someone committed to the environmental cause? That's, you know, I think that that clearly biases things in favor of hiring people on the political left. So therefore, I think it's improper. It violates the whole idea of having a civil service. But yet, if a Republican wants to, you know, say, look, we're way out of balance here. If they do surveys, they show that like upwards of 90% of the Justice Department lawyers are Democrats, right? That's an intolerable system. They accuse us of trying to politicize it. And that's one reason why, if you go back to the 2000s, Sandy, you'll remember this so-called U.S. attorney scandal where Alberto Gonzalez and some of his immediate subordinates, they decided to fire some U.S. attorneys because they didn't think they were doing a good job for then President Bush 43. And the Democrats like turned that into like a nightmare slog of, you know, how can you fire these people? It's all politicized, et cetera. Like it's only politicized if they don't have a majority of the career lawyers thinking like they do. Then it's politicized.
Yeah. One last question. Are you optimistic about the election? And do you think if President Trump is elected, reelected, that we can really root out all of this? Do you think it's possible?
It's always hard to turn back the clock on a big bureaucracy, right? We just see the size of the federal government grows and grows. So that should condition anybody's view of how to make changes and how much progress can be made. But the one thing I do think is that if President Trump is not elected, and I would urge all of your listeners to vote for President Trump, this is obvious. I'm not speaking in any kind of governmental capacity anymore, right? Just in my personal capacity to get their neighbors and their family and their friends to do that, because I'm not sure how long a real balanced constitutional republic holds on if we get a President Kamala Harris. I think that she is a radical, progressive, in many ways, Maoist, like a lot of the Maoists who are around President Obama. And she's talking about somebody like Keith Ellison, who is a, you know, Muslim radical and very anti-Jewish, becoming attorney general. I mean, we're talking about a world that can get a lot worse. And so even if I just focus on avoiding that, I think we need President Trump back in office, Cindy.
Okay, Jeff. Jeff Clark, former United States DOJ assistant district. I can't even talk. Former United States assistant attorney general, also attorney general for a short time, who's been a real champion and unwavering, our kind of people. He's also with the Center for Renewing America, a senior fellow. Jeff, we appreciate so much your time and your character, and I hope we can do this again. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Cindy. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Freeborn is the direct competition to the abortion industry and the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the U.S. By letting a woman see her baby on ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, a baby's chance of life doubles. I tell you about that every time we talk, but I just want to tell you again and hope that you will support in the very most generous way that you can Preborn. Preborn.com/Sandy. That's Preborn.com/Sandy.
Get your popcorn, grab some friends, and get ready for the 1A Film Fest live stream event September 13th, 14th, and 15th. Everyone enjoys movies, so invite your friends and neighbors over for a live stream watch party. We are bringing you 12 amazing documentaries, which together tell the most powerful and complete story ever told. By exercising the First Amendment and using the power of film, and just in time before the election, prepare yourself for the most educational, entertaining, and emotional live stream event of the year, all for only $25. Don't miss this. Go to 1AFilmFest.com for your live stream ticket. Help us spread the word and educate America. That's 1AFilmFest.com. 1AFilmFest.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Jeff Clark is being attacked because he's so strong and so good.
They are destroying and have destroyed the rule of law in America, and they were using our judicial system in order to prosecute and persecute President Trump and anyone who supported him.
The punishment and the pain that has been inflicted on him in his life is so important to the regime because they want to set a deterrent.
If President Trump had sailed off into the sunset, none of this would have happened.
But his key ally in this is this guy, Jeffrey Clark, but who is effectively plotting a coup with the president.
What was his only qualification? That he would do whatever the president wanted him to do.
Jeffrey Clark, who was fully committed to corrupting the DOJ on Trump's behalf.
When they raid your house, they take all your electronics, and they're parking black vans outside your house, and they're following you sometimes, and you know your communications are being monitored, you know, it can tend to have an impact on you.
I think they expected me to cave, but I couldn't. I won't, and I will never do that.
Well, that's the trailer from the Jeff Clark story, and it starts on September the 16th. You go to the jeffclarkstory.com and find out more about it. That was quite a conversation, and I think after that conversation, you understand why he's such a treasure. And you understand more about his courage. I've asked Bruce to join me, as he usually does at this time, my former FBI agent sweetheart and former prosecutor for Cook County. We talked a lot about President Trump, you know, in today's segment, Bruce. What were your thoughts about all those prosecutions? Anything come to mind that you want to comment on?
Well, I think if you don't understand what President Trump has been facing
up to this point. Maybe you understand it better now because it has been relentless. Stormy Daniels, E. Jean Carroll, Jack Smith, and there were others before.
Bonnie Willis.
And Jack Smith again. And
Rashawn.
What he's had to endure, I don't know that anyone else could have gone through. And, you know, when you listen to Jeff, Jeff is an aficionado on the legal system, so you can kind of get lost in, not that he had minutia, but just that he knows the process of the legal system. And what I think is really important about what he said is it shows the coordinated attack that's been waged against Donald Trump. It'll make your head spin. People leaving the Justice Department and taking low-level jobs with local prosecutors so that they can bring these trials against Donald Trump. I think the coordinated effort that you see between Alvin Bragg, Jack Smith, Fonnie Willis, if you watch the way these cases are brought, they're always brought consecutively. Like they'll put President Trump through one, and as soon as he finishes with that case, oh, here comes another one. And then same thing, when he's finished with that, here comes another one. This is not a coincidence. This is a coordinated effort by the Biden administration to knock Donald Trump out of the race. You know, anyone else that I have ever known would have left the battlefield at this point.
Yes, absolutely.
They would have said, you know what, I'm a millionaire, billionaire, whatever President Trump is. I've got a beautiful home. I've got a beautiful wife. I'm 78 years old. I've got great kids and grandkids. I'm going to go home and enjoy myself. I don't need this. But instead, I think it makes him rear up even more. He's got the strongest constitution of any person I think I've ever seen as far as this kind of where he's not actually being physically assaulted. But even though he was physically assaulted.
Yes, I was going to say.
Once he was shot in the air.
And what did he do?
He comes back, fight,
he says to the crowd. He's just been shot.
And this effort is to stop Donald Trump, but it's also to stop Jeff Clark, John Eastman, Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Sandy Rios, the J6ers, the pundits on the air, me, voters. And I'm going to get political here. If Kamala Harris is elected as your president, this will continue because it's working. Most people have turned tail and run. They've taken plea deals. They've recanted. They've done what they had to do to make this go away. And Donald Trump has not. And this will continue if Kamala Harris is elected.
Yeah. It's an amazing story. And someday it will have to be like William Churchill's, History of England? It's like 100 volumes or something. I'm overstating it. But this is going to have to be a multi-volume work to record all the things that have happened during this last few years. It really is just stunning. And, you know, I asked Jeff if he thought we could reverse course, and of course he gave a very honest answer. It's very complicated, but I want to say to all of you, I say this all the time, but I know it's true. I know personally it's true that there's nothing God can't do. There is nothing God can't do. If He wants this nation to survive, it will all fall. It will just be like a house of cards. It's all going to come crumbling down, and righteousness will prevail. Truth will prevail. But it's really, we have to fight to make that happen because we're on the side of righteousness, right? I mean, you can't just sit back and just hope or, you know, ignore it. We live in a place where we just feel people ignore what's going on. There's a lot of recreation and a lot of people having fun, and it's so easy to do that. But I cannot believe that's what God would have us do. I'm saying to all of you, doesn't God want us to be responsible? Doesn't He want us to be faithful to the end? Are we wired as Christians to just enjoy the blessings God has given us and not take seriously, have enough mental energy or concern to watch what's happening and try to do something to push back on it? Say something. Are we to just remain silent and what we feel is comfortable? Are we to be fearful? I know that's not true. You know that's not true. And so I'm just inviting you all to do what many of you already do. Do something. Just do something. Just do one thing to help this election and to do. Remember, we talked just this week about the Only Citizens Voting Coalition, and that starts September 16th through the 20th, the national week of it. And if you want to know how to help with stop that, it's onlycitizensvotecoalition.com. The SAVE Act is getting ready. It's being considered in Congress right now. It's a bold step for Speaker Johnson to take to add that to a funding bill, and yet it would stop illegal immigrants from voting in this country. So, see, there's a variety of things that you can do. I try to give you information and help equip you to do something. I hope I'm successful at that, because I can't just be talking for no reason. There has to be a purpose, and there has to be a purpose in you listening. And so I'm just hoping that you will listen and actually do something. All right. Well, I do appreciate you listening. I appreciate it so much. It humbles me. And I want to thank our sponsors, because they humble me too by sponsoring the show. Timothy Plan joined us just recently, and they let you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.